calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in those cheers and applause? No, there isn't. Welcome, friends. It's great to be with you once again. This episode is going to be a bit schizoid, and that's out of necessity. I want to explore the concept of destiny and fate. Haven't we all had some encounter with the bizarre, the unexplained, an event so weird and unlikely, there simply is no logical explanation? I've had a few of those, and I'm going to tell you about it in a little bit, but in the meantime, stick with me. I need to address a global development. You know, sometimes I think I might be psychic. The last episode was called Full Auto on Frauds, where we went off on the very worst people on the fucking planet. The junk people. That's right. Some people are junk. Those that live to tell the rest of us what to do. The meddlesome shit for brains without whom our planet would be so much better off. Really, these people need to be removed from this sphere. Pack them all into one of Musk's rockets and shoot them into the sun. So not even a week after I post my last episode, here's a steaming hot story all over the news. Seems the EU has its very own Janet Reno. She's a grimbo named Vera Jourova. And this repulsive harridan is a dictator. She's screaming for a crackdown on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and other platforms. There's a word that's almost never good and generally used by power-mad assholes. Crackdown. Beware when you hear that word, folks. Its context is rarely good. By the way, Vera's title is European Union Justice Commissioner. Let's look at that for a moment. What the fuck is a Justice Commissioner doing making policy on social media? Justice is about crime, right? What this turd in a skirt is doing is criminalizing speech. The story ran everywhere. Here's the version from Reuters.
Microsoft, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube signed a code of conduct in 2016 to review most complaints within a 24-hour time frame.
There's another nanny statist phrase to red flag. Code of conduct. Who the fuck gets graded on conduct, Small children and criminals, right? The Reuters story goes on to say,
the companies removed 70% of the content flagged, up from 59% last year.
They're bragging about their censorship stats, folks.
EU Justice Commissioner Vera Jourova has said that she does not want to see a 100% removal rate because that could impinge on free speech.
It's incredible the way these assholes lie. This fucking tyrant in a shoe-polished, dyed, lacquered hair with a pink blazer and a rhinestone poodle on the lapel has buffalo balls between her thunder thighs. How stupid does she think the people are, Well, I wasn't paying very close attention when the EU was formed. I wonder what the slogan was.
Stronger together?
Or maybe,
I'm with the statists.
So I did a little reading up, and of course, the EU, which it appears is destroying Europe, began to take its stranglehold with the currency. That was step one. So much easier to make people obey when you control their finances. When you use a gun, they might shoot back. When the government taxes you into submission, what are you going to do? Tax them back? Step two was erasing borders, and I know exactly how they pitched that. Convenience, solidarity, Kumbaya. Of course, when you dissolve borders, you consolidate power, don't you? Let's say, for sake of argument, that the big social media platforms were not run by commies and quasi-commies. Now, vacuous Vera is in fact from the Czech Republic. And were she speaking only for the Czech Republic, with a population of around 10 million, the stewards of Facebook and Google and Twitter might actually have had the balls to tell Vera to go pound sand and write off those 10 million potential users. But Vera gets to speak for 500 million users, and who's going to kiss off that volume of revenue, Nobody. People around the world, the USA included, never seem to understand how dangerous centralized power is. It's the death of freedom, beginning with freedom of choice. Aren't people always clamoring for freedom of choice to be or do this according to their desires, not those of another? And there used to be that choice. If you didn't like the attitude in France, you could slide over to Italy or Spain. Not happy about the way they do things in Texas? Well, New York, here we come. Not anymore. Facebook, Twitter, and Google, which owns YouTube, are only too happy to comply with big boss bitch Vera. Look how these outfits are training billions of people around the world to accept their fucking speech tyranny. How often do we see Facebook friends vanish, sometimes forever, but if not, when they reappear, they laugh and shrug and say, "I got zucked." Like that's funny or okay. It's not. We're being chastised, we're being spanked, we're being scolded, we're being gagged. We're being put in the fucking corner by soy boys and SJWs and snowflakes. In Soviet Russia, that happened at the point of a gun. Now it happens at the click of a mouse, and we never even know who silenced us. It's goddamn scary. Happened to me over the most innocuous thing you could imagine. I had just posted my episode 26, Dangerous Summer Fun. Check it out at thatlarryshow.com. And the thumbnail depicted yours truly with a gorgeous pointy chick in a bikini. And I get a message from Facebook asking if, for a few bucks, would I like to boost that post? Maybe expose this little show to some new people? Well, sure, Mr. Zuckerberg, here's my credit card number and the demos I'd like to reach. And pretty soon, I get a message saying,
"Sorry, your ad is too sexually suggestive. Rejected."
What the fuck? A girl in a bikini? First of all, nobody under age 13 is supposed to be using Facebook, but even if they are, a girl in a bikini? Do the children ever see those? On TV, at the movies, and billboards, and every goddamn piece of advertising since Christ was a corporal? I'm posting the image from that episode on thatlarryshow.com so everyone can see how suggestive it was. And right next to it, you can see the version those protectors of the children allowed once I cleaned it up. Happens on Twitter all the time, doesn't it? Jack Dorsey and his minions and bots and algorithms have their agenda of speech and thought suppression. And if you step outside their boundaries, well, you're shadow banned or banned outright. Recently, some folks have done some kick-ass old-time investigative reporting. Not just Googling other online bullshit, which is what passes for journalism today. These people are real journalists. They conned Twitter employees into running their mouths over pizza and beer and got them on video admitting to their censorship fuckery, proudly testifying that they silence those who do not agree with them. Most of you know Dick Masterson in The Dick Show, who was banned for life from Twitter because he suggested somebody eat a cinder block. That was considered a threat. Think about that. Go eat a cinder block is a threat. Wow. So phrases and words are being banned. They love to ban shit. And mark my words, next it's going to be all the 4- and 5-letter words. That's what Vera and her legions of shit-ass sycophants and mindless lackeys want.
Everybody just play nice, don't be offensive, don't be inappropriate, just say what we tell you to say. Here, take this mood-leveling drug and sit quietly with your hands folded until you learn some manners, young man.
Vera is also pushing real hard to clamp down on, or I should say, crack down on Bitcoin platforms and cryptocurrencies. So typical of commie scum. Control speech, control money. Cryptocurrency must scare the living shit out of her and all the enemies of freedom around the world because the Euro Treasury and the US Fed, they will create baseless fiat currency. Who the fuck are we rebels to dare usurp their power? Any day soon, you'll be seeing some stories about how cryptocurrencies are hurting children. Yeah, they'll find a way to tie it to, oh, kiddie porn or human trafficking. You just watch. And the nations Vera's leaning on hardest are Poland and Hungary. Maybe the last two take-no-shit places over there. I hope they tell her to go fuck herself in exactly those glorious, disrespectful, and hateful words. Where do these assholes come from? Well, Vera never held a real job in her worthless life of non-achievement. She's a career politician, aren't they always? And as I say often, there are no mysteries. Who mentored Vera? Why, none other than EU President Jean-Claude Juncker. That pile of steaming shit that I ordered dragged to my dojo, where Tony Spumante's gorillas caned his cottage cheesy deceitful commie ass in episode 17. Here's a little sample of what we did to Juncker.
No!
Why did we beat Juncker's ass with a Singapore cane? Because he actually threatened the United States that if we didn't get on board with his global agenda, he was going to break up the United States, beginning with Texas and Ohio. But maybe I shouldn't laugh. Maybe that seditious little shit is making good on his threat now that California wants to secede with this new California. You can't make this shit up, can you? Since Vera wants to stifle free speech, I think she should see it at its most vital and vibrant. I would hope that when the people of Europe wake up and realize just how evil Vera Jourova is, they'll give her the Quasimodo treatment. Strap that bullying bag to a turntable on wheels and roll her into town square where the people can throw rotten fruit and raw sewage at her for a day or three as an object lesson to all who would restrict free speech. So Vera, if you should hear this, I doubt you ever will, but some people have a few things to say to you.
Fuck you.
Fuck you!
Fuck you, bitch!
Fuck you!
Fuck you!
How much of life is luck or lack of it? What is fate? Are we predestined, powerless to change the course of our lives? I used to know a lineman for the phone company, and he claimed that Bell or AT&T or whatever manufactured these switches that they rated to last 40 years. And the guys that engineered these switches were so accurate in predicting their longevity that the company would send out a crew to the middle of Kansas or wherever and tell them to install all new switches because the existing one's 40-year lifespan was over. As the crew was removing and installing switches, many of the old ones actually failed within days or sometimes hours of that prediction. I've no idea if what he told me was true or bullshit, but it made a fascinating story. So do we get a limited number of days? What about destiny? We love to watch videos of people getting their tickets punched by the fist of fate, don't we? I did a show that sort of touched on that, episode 11, Larry Cheats Death, which was inspired by a video that showed a guy just getting crushed by an automobile wheel that somehow came bounding toward him at a terrific rate of speed and took a couple of strategic bounces and landed on the back of the guy's head, slamming him face first to the sidewalk with tremendous force. When I saw it, I laughed. Not because I'm particularly cruel, but because the event was so impossibly random. It was so unlikely. It looked like a staged stunt, maybe done with CGI, the kind of thing where people will say, oh, one in a million, or wrong place, wrong time. And these events just defy not only logic, but probability. Yet, they happen. There was a story on the news the other night, might have been New York or Chicago, and there was a shot of a car parked curbside, and it looked like Godzilla had stepped on it. But it had been hit by a huge chunk of ice that had fallen from a skyscraper. And when I saw it, I recalled a time myself, walking north on 6th Avenue in Midtown on a bitter cold and windy winter day. And suddenly, just a few feet in front of me, boom! It was like a landmine went off and shrapnel pelted me. It hurt. It was an icicle. It had fallen maybe 60 stories to the sidewalk. When it separated from the building, it must have been 6 feet long and as thick around as your leg. Had I been walking just 2 paces faster, I'd have looked like Godzilla stepped on me. How often do we elude death or dismemberment and not even know it? Probably a lot more than we realize. Some texting asshole blows a stoplight at an intersection, and we never know how close we came to getting T-boned because we're not looking in a rearview mirror. And it needn't be anything as action-packed as a car wreck. We're just about as likely to check out from a fall on a staircase or slip in the tub or choke on an olive. There's a famous biblical quote about predestination. The very hairs on your head are numbered, so don't be afraid. You're worth more than many sparrows. Well, that's reassuring. How many sparrows, I wonder, to be exact? Was that the cryptocurrency back then? I've always believed we can make our own luck, but then when you see the hellacious shit that can happen simply through bad luck, the theory deflates. But don't some people make their own bad luck? Sometimes we bend the truth or use inaccurate words to cover our own mistakes. One that always frosts me is people who will drive recklessly, wrap a car around a utility pole, and invariably they say,
I had an accident.
What they had was a collision, but it sure as hell was no accident. But they bullshit themselves and us. They absolve themselves from fault by claiming that any act on the other side of deliberate is an accident. Bullshit. Some fucktard texting while driving doesn't intentionally rear-end your car. So now it's accidental? Not accidental. Negligent as fuck. Accidental? No. People bullshit themselves this way in every facet of their lives. They fuck up constantly and then rationalize their incompetence or carelessness or stupidity by claiming mishap or bad luck. I once sat at a red light, and next to me at the curb was a UPS truck. The driver was making a delivery, and some guy, he was not a kid, he didn't look like a thug or a criminal, just some middle-aged guy in a windbreaker with gray hair. This guy steps off the curb into that UPS truck and snatches the keys from the ignition. He pockets them and vanishes. And 10 seconds later, the UPS guy gets back into the truck, reaches for the ignition, and he just stares at that empty keyhole like it said, E equals MC squared. And for a second, I thought of saying, hey, UPS man, some gray-haired mope in a windbreaker just snatched your keys. He went that way. And then I thought, I'm not doing that. If removing that key was just too much effort, he deserved to have them swiped. This was Queens, New York, not fucking Mayberry. There was a rash of burglaries recently nearby. People outraged because stuff from inside their cars was stolen. And there are all kinds of infrared security camera footage of these thieves boosting stuff from inside of cars, cell phones, and wallets, and so on. And then it turned out every one of these cars was left unlocked outside overnight. Who the fuck leaves their wallet or phone in a car overnight and then doesn't lock it? I'll tell you who. An idiot. Because this is L.A., not Mayberry. And these self-victimizing crime victims will say, "Oh, I forgot." Well, that's rich. Aren't some things just reflexive? Have those same people ever forgotten to, put their pants on before they go to work? Or open their mouths before inserting a fork? Or grab toilet paper before wiping their ass? Aren't many, many things we do simply automatic? There's no excuse. But they make them anyway, don't they? No matter how lame. But what about the fickle finger of fate? God, I'd love to win a lottery or be mistaken for Ryan Gosling by a gang of supermodels hell-bent on carnal pleasure. But every so often, things do happen that defy logic and probability, and you just have to wonder. One of my weirdest occurred back in New York. There was this classy little Italian joint I frequented on the Upper East Side. Food was great. The owner was a cool dude, and it had a really comfortable bar at which they served the full menu. When I'm eating alone, I always sit at a bar. Sitting solo at a table makes me feel like the loneliest guy on earth. So I pop in there one Saturday. It was probably around 3 in the afternoon. Too late for lunch, too early for dinner. And I'm sitting there having a Johnny Red on ice, waiting for my meal. And I hear this very distinctive voice. It says,
"I'm hungry. Would anyone care to dine with me?"
And I turn around, and there he is. This old-time movie and TV actor. He was never a superstar, but a star nonetheless. His name was Ben Gazzara. He had a couple of TV series and meaty roles in some pretty cool movies, including Killing of a Chinese Bookie and one of my all-time favorites, Husbands, both of which were directed by John Cassavetes. You really should check out Husbands. It ain't perfect, but it sure has its moments, one of which is this line delivered by Gazzara.
"Aside from sex, I like you guys better."
Husbands would be a great movie for women to watch who have yet to figure out men. So I'm in this cool little Italian joint in which there are just a handful of people, and Ben, who may possibly have had a drink or two by then, he's just invited everyone in the joint to eat with him. And I look at him and smile, and he's waving me over like we're old pals or something. So I walk over and say hello, shake his hand, and politely declined. There was someplace else I had to be. I was an idiot. I should have canceled whatever the fuck else I was doing and sat down and eaten with Ben. By the time I left, 4 or 5 people had joined him at the table, and they were laughing their heads off at Ben the raconteur. But I gave it not another thought. A month or two later, I was catty-cornered by the plaza in a hurry to get someplace, and I'm trying to flag a cab. As one pulls up to the curb, I feel a presence at my side. I turn, and who is standing beside me? Ben Gazzara. He was also trying to hail a cab. And he says he's in no big hurry, take it. And then he says, "Haven't we met?" And I told him how I'd regretted not dining with him at Nico's a few weeks ago. And he smiles and tells me he and several complete strangers closed the joint that night. We shook hands again, and Ben said,
"Rain check."
As the cab drove away, I sat there thinking how weird this was, a city of 8 million people, and I run into the same guy twice in a few weeks. Unlikely, but not impossible. A few more months rolled by, and when I checked my calendar, I realized I'd not taken a vacation in several years. I'd also lost my dad after a long illness, and besides feeling burned out, it was a shitty New York winter, cold and rainy and slushy and gray. I needed a dose of sunshine and heat, and someplace I'd never been before. I'd visited a few Caribbean spots and wanted to try something fresh. A trusted friend gave very high marks to Barbados. Oh man, that was a hot tip. I had a blast. I went solamente just after Christmas and through New Year's. They used to call Barbados the jewel of the Caribbean. Highest literacy rate and best standard of living in the entire region. I had a room right on a gorgeous beach. Fantastic bars and restaurants close by. Classy babage. Red Stripe beer and their far superior version of hamburger, the Flying Fish Sandwich. Way healthier and tastier too. I had such a great time there. I've got a story about jet skis worthy of a movie, but that's for another episode. For some reason, they don't call it New Year's Eve, they call it Old Year's Night. And the whole damn island dresses up in their very best. And they parade around having a great time. And the Bajan women, oh, they have a walk. A walk like women nowhere else. There's no describing it, you just have to see it. Rihanna must have many cousins because a lot of them are just as beautiful. Time flies when you're having fun. And so I find myself at the airport with a face on because I really don't want to leave this tropical paradise and return to the city of suffering. It was a tiny airport, one where you had to walk out of the terminal and across the open tarmac and climb the stairs to the plane. And appropriately now, it's drizzling, first and only time of the trip. And I'm looking through the window at the plane, and from behind me I hear...
Pardon me, is that the plane to New York?
I turn around, and it's Ben.
Holy shit, it's you.
We both burst out laughing. Three random meetings in as many months, and now more than 2,000 miles from home. What were the odds? That's certainly one for Guinness. Or maybe the Twilight Zone. Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging with me once again here at the dojo. It's always great to be with you. If you listen through iTunes, take a minute and throw us a 5-star review. It helps the show grow. And don't forget to slide over to thatlarryshow.com for a look at that obscene bikini shot Facebook refused to run. And while you're there, don't forget to click the subscribe by email button so you never miss an episode. There's over 60 of them archived there, so go ahead and binge listen. And if that's not enough, pop over to patreon.com/thatlarryshow and join the dojo. There, you will find secret episodes only dojo members get access to, as well as other goodies like signed books and custom recordings. You'll dig it. And so, my friends, if you should ever find yourself alone at a bar and some old-time TV star invites you to dine with him, say yes. Wish to hell I did. Ben left the planet back in 2012. What are the odds he's the first guy I'll meet when it's my turn?
What the fuck are you doing here?
I'll see you next Tuesday, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, take no shit.